the right issue is critical. And asking the right question is sometimes more than half the battle, right? So I always encourage folks to be curious.
Actually seek to understand the bigger picture and the true problem statement, right? Ask as many clarifying questions as you need. Differentiate between the cause and the symptom.
Welcome to Think Deeply, Speak Simply. Brought to you by Presentium. A show about the art and science of communicating ideas and how everyday leaders unlock their careers with great communication. And now, here's your host, Jay Rook.
Success in the business world is often dictated by finding better solutions to problems than one's competitors. We all face problems and seek solutions. Whether you're the leader of an emerging business or a Fortune 500, mastering problem solving becomes increasingly important as one's career progresses. While anyone can formulate a hypothesis and test a solution, artful problem solving lies at the intersection of nuance and experience. Big impact problems can be complex and need to be studied with surgical methodology to find precise solutions. That's why companies hire seasoned problem solvers like today's guest. So how do we become experts or rock stars in the discipline of problem solving? Today, we are joined by Ajay Gupta, who shares his 30 years of healthcare experience as senior partner of McKinsey & Company. Ajay shares three crucial steps to better problem solving and also notes that no two problems are exactly alike. Ajay is followed by Suchi Srinivasan, head of corporate strategy at Dell Technologies. Suchi will guide us through her unique approach to problem solving, and she insists that solution-driven principles can be applied to any problem, regardless of its complexity. With that, let's hear from our guest. Ajay, thank you so much for being here today.
I'm delighted to be here, Jay.
Excellent. Ajay, can you tell us about your experience at McKinsey, and please share some of the highlights of your career with us?
Sure. So, you know, I spent almost 30 years at McKinsey, and most of that time serving healthcare companies of all types. And during that period, came to appreciate the real positive impact that great leadership can have on all stakeholders and build great companies. And, you know, just in terms of background, I actually started first out of college in the oil industry. I worked for a French company called Schlumberger and spent 5 years helping oil companies like BP and Shell explore for oil and gas around the world. And, you know, Schlumberger took me to all parts. I was in China in the mid 80s. I was in Indonesia and Brunei, and then in Assam in India, and then in Holland in the North Sea in the late 80s. And it was quite an adventure, and that required daily problem solving of all kinds, which was a ton of fun. But at McKinsey, I got fascinated by the healthcare sector. And at a yearly, you know, when I was an engagement manager at an early age, and it's just such a large part of the economy. And there are so many different aspects, you know, on the provider side. You've got the hospital systems, the integrated health networks, the academic medical centers, and you've got pharma and biotech and medtech and healthcare IT and drugstore chains and PBMs and distributors and, you know, so many chronic disease management, so many other aspects of the industry. And I was fascinated by all these aspects and how they interact. And the complexity of that sector meant that first principles problem solving was really important to get to the bottom of issues and find creative solutions. During my time there, I mean, I did, you know, all kinds of things, right? Lots of acquisitions, large and small, some with, you know, huge cultural challenges across countries. I worked on growing new medical revenues for blockbuster therapies, you know, building new service businesses with recurring revenue streams, changing organization models to make companies more agile and nimble. We did a lot of work on commercial excellence, you know, really helping. How do you drive frontline sales reps to really raise their game and operate and sell better and manage account relationships? And then, of course, lots of just core, you know, product growth strategies, restructuring. You know, we had once a situation with a client that had a huge reimbursement cut. And then did some fun things outside of healthcare as well. Actually, one of the projects I did was build a business plan for the Russian space station. That was way back 20 years ago. Flew to Moscow, witnessed the launch of the Soyuz. It was all pretty cool. But anyway, I recently retired a few months back and now just serve on several boards, both for-profit and non-for-profit. And then I'm also very active, a private investor, and I just get a kick out of helping build great companies.
Well, I'm sure in all that breadth of experience, you recognize at times that so much of effective problem solving derives from effectively identifying the right question. And I'm curious what markers you look for that let you know that you're focusing on the right issue.
Yeah, that's a great question, Jay. So you're right. Focusing on the right issue is critical. And asking the right question is sometimes more than half the battle, right? So I always encourage folks to be curious and always ask themselves, why are things the way they are, right? What are the root causes for something? You know, why does it have to be? Or what I say is, why is, right? And I think if you get on that, and I'm a big fan of systems thinking, right? What are the causal relationships between different pieces? And so focusing on the right issue is, you know, all of that helps in making sure you're not, you know, off on in the wrong area. And also, it's very important to understand the context to focus on the right issue, right? Oftentimes, the context defines what's important. And you can ask yourself, you know, are you thinking expansively enough? You know, is what you're focusing on really going to address, you know, whatever problem you're getting at, right? And if you looked at an issue differently, right, would you ask different questions? And so you're absolutely right, Jay. Getting to and asking the right questions is absolutely critical to being a good problem solver.
Thank you. And even if we believe we found the right solution, we still need buy-in to get the good implementation. How do you create consensus and buy-in before presenting the solution?
Buy-in is essential to success. Yeah, I would just say that, you know, there's no one approach to building buy-in, right? There's wide variation across companies and cultures. So at the one extreme, I've worked with some Japanese companies who have this process called Nimawashi, which is basically sitting down with each of the stakeholders up and down the chain to get consensus. And it can feel like it takes forever, and it does, trust me, it can be very frustrating. But the good news is that once you get buy-in, they can move very, very quickly. Right. On the other end, I work with small private companies, and they just get all the key stakeholders in a room and hash it out in a very open, constructive challenge session. Right. So, and then, you know, sometimes in big companies, you've got complex matrices to navigate. It's never, you know, fun or pleasant, but, you know, you have to put in the effort. So there's no one way to get buy-in. It's very contextual, very cultural, but it is, as you said, absolutely essential to success.
Great answer. Thank you. How do you deliver news to the client if you believe they're asking the wrong question?
Yeah. So it's really about three things, right? First is, do you have enough trust, right? And can you have a candid conversation? So, and they need to know and feel that in a very, very real way. So at McKinsey, you know, we were explicit. It was always client's interest first. And they knew that, right? Which made it easier then to have the difficult conversation, right? So that's first is having trust. The second though is listening and listening carefully. You know, what sometimes happens is outsiders come in or folks come in and they've got basically, you know, preconceived ideas or frameworks. And it's the proverbial, you know, a hammer looking for a nail. And so all problems look like the same type of nail, right? And that doesn't work either. You've got to contextualize and tailor your approach and frameworks. And then you have to make sure that really think and say, is the client really asking the right question? And remember, not all business issues are black or white. Right. There's lots of gray and there's lots of organizational and cultural issues at play as well. But if you've listened carefully, if you have trust, right, and you're convinced that, you know, it's the wrong issue, then it's really coming down to having an honest discussion. Right. Can you have an honest discussion with the client? And then how do you influence people? And again, there's no single way to influence people. Some folks, some leaders are good with, you know, logical reasoning top down. And you go through the logic and that can work. Others need to personally experience it, and they have to, you know, wallow in the issues and spend time understanding, you know, and leading them through, you know, kind of in a way to understand why the way they're looking at things is not right, or they're asking the wrong question or the wrong issue. You know, sometimes you need to go with the flow and lead them to the answer, right, if you will, right, and that works. In other situations, I've had to connect them with other executives or other companies to get them to open up their aperture, right. So there's multiple influence models. I wish, Jay, there was a single model, but unfortunately, human beings are way too complex for that, right? But either way, getting buy-in is absolutely essential for success, right? And figuring out the right way to influence your audience and what will work in your context is absolutely essential.
And AJ, do you have a preferred problem-solving approach and why? For example, decision trees or Venn diagrams or MISI?
Right. So addressing most complex problems usually has multiple phases, right? So first is structuring the problem. And by that, what I mean is really decomposing the problem down into its components, right? And then each of those, you know, can be analyzed in detail. So one of the tools I find very useful for that is issue trees, right? You take an overall problem and break it down. And the art in this problem structuring phase is knowing which branches of the tree are likely to be most important, right? Otherwise, you end up boiling the ocean, right, if you're not careful. And then for each of those parts of the issue tree, you can apply different analytical approaches. Right. And then the other thing that's very important, great problem solvers always dig deeper. That's absolutely essential, right? They never settle for the obvious answer, but they always dig deeper and ask themselves, why is this? What would happen if some underlying belief were different or changed? And remember, there are always multiple layers to the onion, right? And just when you think you understand an issue deeply, you realize there are second order and third order issues. And that requires you then to go back and analyze that further. And you have to go back to the issue tree and revisit it. And you find there are whole, you know, parts of the tree that you can just chop off. And there may be new issues that emerge that you have to then, you know, address and analyze in detail as well. So that's sort of an iterative process. And I found that systems thinking, which comes, you know, way back from engineering college, is very helpful in that problem solving effort, you know, understanding causality, right? So in other words, what happens when this gets impacted? And if this changes, that changes, and how does that change the big picture? So I think that that also helps. The other thing I would say is that some types of problems have lots of data, right? In those situations, it helps to be numerically facile. What I mean by being numerically facile is being able to see patterns in the numbers, right? And data, and not getting lost in the numbers or data, right? But getting to the key insights behind what the numbers are telling us. And then I think the other thing is not being afraid to ask dumb questions, right? I find too many people are just willing to go with the flow, right? They assume others or the so-called experts know better. And that is not first principle problem solving, right? So having the courage to speak up and challenge and not being afraid to come across as, you know, not knowledgeable or wrong, you know, that's actually a sign of strength, right? Counterintuitively. So after all that analysis then, right, you got the structuring, you got the analysis, then comes the synthesis phase. And it's not quite linear, right? It's more iterative than that, right? But synthesis is really critical as well. And that's when you pull back and up and ask yourself, what is all of this structuring and all of this analysis telling us? You know, what are the so what's? What are the big picture messages? What's the overall story, right? And have we pressure tested different, you know, underlying assumptions? And it's very interesting, right? Creating lots of PowerPoint pages is easy, right? I mean, that's, but really boiling it down to core messages and insights, you know, that's harder and that takes more time. So one tool I suggest is to just write down the story in a simple narrative and ask yourself, you know, does it hang together? Can I explain it simply? Right. And if not, you probably have more work to do. And then you ask yourself that if you take your solution and assumptions and you turn it 30 degrees, you know, does it still hold? And you know, how wrong could I be? In other words, you know, stress testing it, right? To say, you know, is it robust enough? And I find myself constantly iterating between the top down and bottom up. So you're zooming in, you know, zooming out to the big picture, right? And then zooming into the details and nitty gritty, and then zooming out. And I think that constant iteration is what gets to distinctive problem solving.
Hugely helpful. Thank you for that comprehensive answer. This is a question we ask of all of our guests on the show. Do you think great business communication is more of an art or science, and why?
Okay. It's a great question, Jay. So I think, you know, great business communication is just great business problem solving. I really don't think you can separate the two, right? It's not that someone's not a good problem solver and then, but they're a wonderful communicator. It's just, I have not seen that, right? They're so tied together, right? And so I really think it is both art and science, right? There's a method, right? But there's also great judgment and intuition and pattern recognition, right? That's the art part of it, right? That as well as the science, right? So, and I find that folks who excel in business communications have mastered both the art and the science. So it's really both aspects.
We'd love to give you the opportunity to tell our viewers where they can learn more about you. Tell us where they can find you on social media or the internet, et cetera.
Yeah. So, you know, Jay, I'm actually a pretty private person, yeah. But I only recently came on social media and on LinkedIn, right? Which sounds like I'm stuck in the old dark ages. But I would be happy to, right? If anybody wants to contact me, probably the best way is just to send an email and I'd be happy to respond.
Excellent. Well, Ajay, on behalf of myself and all of our listeners, I just want to say thank you so much for your time that you put into preparing all these questions and for being on the show today. I really appreciate your insightful responses.
Yeah, thank you. I enjoyed it.
Before we move on to our next guest, let's hear from our amazing sponsor, Presentium.
Do you spend way too much time creating presentations at work? Do you hate the hassle of creating polished presentations for work? If so, I've got an opportunity for you to reclaim your time, reduce your stress, and make your ideas shine. Think Deeply, Speak Simply is brought to you by Presentium. Presentium makes overnight presentations for enterprise customers at a fraction of the cost of design firms and agencies. They have made over 1 million slides and are trusted by thousands of enterprise customers. It is super easy to use. Just email Presentium a rough draft of your slides by 5:30 p.m., and you'll receive a beautifully crafted presentation in your inbox by 9:30 the next morning. Put Zen in your presentations, reclaim your time, and let your ideas shine. To learn more, visit Presentium.com. That's Presentium.com. And now back to the show.
And now we are joined by Suchi. Suchi, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jay. Nice to be here.
We are thrilled to have you. Suchi, can you tell us a little bit about your role as head of corporate strategy for Dell?
Yeah. So Dell is a large, complex player. You know, we play in many segments, address many different types of customers with many different products. So in my role, primarily, I'm looking to identify growth opportunities for the company that will result in creating value for all of our stakeholders, starting with our customers, you know, going to our employees, with our investors, right? That's growth is really the mindset right now. The work is very collaborative with a wide variety of executive and non-executive stakeholders, often involves dealing with complex problem statements, and is, I have a small team that spends all their time thinking deeply about how to go after this growth.
Gotcha. Thank you. Today's theme is rockstar problem solving. What are your personal best practices as they relate to problem solving?
Yeah, I think there's few key principles at heart that can be applied to a problem, no matter how complex this is. So the first step is actually seek to understand the bigger picture and the true problem statement, right? Ask as many clarifying questions as you need. Differentiate between the cause and the symptom. So clarification and true understanding is first step. Then there is structuring the problem, which means disaggregate that problem statement into as many components as is necessary so that you can go after each and every one of them to be able to solve. Then there is the third step is gather the facts to be able to understand what are the influencing factors, how large or small is the problem, right? I mean, the fact basis forms the truth or the foundation for the problem solving process. And from there, it's actually intellectual curiosity, repeatedly asking why until you are clear. And the answer, that's how the answer reveals itself, is actually by repeatedly asking why. And the last step is once you have arrived at the solution, seek to make the answer as actionable as possible. That's also part of the problem solving process. That's it.
Great advice. Love all of that. When your decisions impact so many in an organization, does that change the way you think about problem solving?
Yeah, I think there's a great burden to get into the details and get the fact basis right. Because especially in large organizations, from the mastery of the facts comes credibility. And large organizations are usually seeking very credible experts to solve problems, right? And so the way to get to credibility is to master the facts. So that's sort of number one. Then there is the consistent sequence, if you will, or the logical sequence of that problem solving. You know, all of those steps that I talked about, break down the problem, structure it, understand it, ask why. I think the repeated application of that and the masters of this actually are Toyota, right? I'm a big fan of their A3 method, which for those of you who haven't, you know, heard about it, it's worth a quick search to just pull that up. It's beautiful. It's this 4 or 5 steps that can be applied to any problem in the world, irrespective of situation, and that elegantly gets to the answer. So that allows mentoring of, you know, junior colleagues, apprenticing in the problem solving process. It provides transparency into the problem solving process to aid in credibility and buy-in of the solution, which is very important for large organizations. So they feel, you know, trust in the solution and therefore then the desire to adopt it, which is usually then what leads to impact.
Very thoughtful response. Thank you. Suchi, you've held high-level positions both in the corporate world as well as working as a consultant. What did you learn about problem-solving in each of those environments, and how did these differing experiences inform how you solve problems?
Yeah, you know, the core tenets of problem-solving, the structuring, the intellectual curiosity, the fact basis, they don't by themselves change very much. My observation is that I think sometimes consultants can tend to be a bit of a purist, for lack of a better term, you know, in how we try to classify and categorize problems. I mean, you know, we've all heard one too many consulting framework jokes, and they exist for good reasons because, you know, as consultants, we like to group things together and try to find patterns as we're perhaps solving many problems of the same kind. You know, the pattern matching allows for velocity in the problem solving process. But in the corporate world, I think that's less useful. It may still be a technique that you use in, you know, to arrive at the answer, but the corporate world places a disproportionate value on the answer, the action-oriented nature of the answer, because of that relentless pressure to execute. So to take a solution, you know, it might be to say, we have to grow in emerging economies. I mean, that's you know, the type of, well, great. How exactly are we going to do that becomes very, very important. It's not enough to stop at the growth exists in the emerging economies and we have to go after.
And as you've climbed in rank over your tenure, how has your approach to problem solving evolved?
Yeah, I think in the initial parts of one's career, there's a lot of focus on learning the tools, applying it extensively. Often the problems are very clearly scoped because, you know, they've usually, somebody else, usually more senior than you, has scoped the problem, has broken it down into its constituent parts. So, you know, often one is seeing parts of a much larger problem. And so as I've grown in my career with years of experience, what I've found is that the problems I now encounter are much more complex, actually ill-defined, very ambiguous. So it's the level of ambiguity that really changes with tenure in career. And so it's hard to immediately jump in with a hypothesis of a solution. It's actually not possible, and or even apply some of those, you know, problem solving techniques. I spend a disproportionate amount of my time actually trying to uncover the real problem statement. What is it that's actually a problem? What is it that's a symptom? Which piece of the problem will lead to the most impact? And asking those kinds of questions allows to get to the heart of the problem or the real question, as the case may be, which then allows the team to make progress, right? So that's a big part of my job. And then the other big part of my job now is actually coaching and mentoring and apprenticing my team, lots of other team members, on the art and science of problem solving, all the tips and tricks that I'm sharing in this podcast.
Super helpful. Thank you for that share. What's an indicator that you pay attention to that lets you know you've sufficiently thought about how to solve the problem before diving into the solutions?
I think there are three or four things that it's important to be able to crisply articulate about the problem before you can get into the solution space. So that's almost like my checklist. We've got to be able to understand the detailed background, you know, all of the broader situation, the context of it. We've got to explain the current situation, right? Most business problems fall into what is the current situation or the current problem. Then there is go back to the goals and be able to articulate the perceived goals that will translate to success, right? And then the fourth one is the root cause analysis. So, you know, if you've done these three and have asked repeatedly the why, you should have gotten to the root cause analysis. Once you've got these four elements, the situation, the problem, the perceived goals, which is what is your North Star, and the root cause analysis, then you are in a position to start to think about, okay, how do we get to the goals with all of this fact basis? What does that solution look like? What are those countermeasures that need to be put into place?
Excellent. Suji, you mentioned a few times talking about art and science in our conversation, and this is a question we ask of all of our guests on the show, which is, do you think great business communication is more of an art or science, and why?
I have very much considered it to be an art, right? That's been my experience. I think we spend 80% of our days communicating in one way, shape, or form. And what I've found is that for all of the science of problem solving that you and I have just sat here and discussed and tried to decompose with a playbook, eventually, when it comes to decision making to actually move these to action, there's a lot of influencing that needs to happen. Influencing is then done through stories, through powerful communication, right? Because you're playing on human emotions and human fears, even because somebody somewhere is taking a risk with a certain solution. And in order to try to, let's say, grow the business or leave a market, right? Those decisions are always fraught with risks and trade-offs. And so the art of good storytelling is an art at the end of the day. So.
Love that. Thank you. What advice would you have for aspiring business leaders who want to improve their communication?
I think the fundamental advice I would have is, you know, three or four pieces. To build on the problem-solving playbook here, which is the mastery of the facts, the breakdown of the problem into solutions, using your intellectual curiosity to repeatedly ask why until the root cause is clear, and then constructing a solution. That, I think, is the first part of it. I would append onto it two things that are really important. One is understand the people, the landscape. Who are the decision makers? You know, who are the influencers? Who's going to own the execution plan if it's any kind of a business situation, especially, right? That makes it very real. So work the real organization to be able to then get those ideas to life and be able to tell that story of the problem, the situation, and the solution in a very simple way, sort of using powerful storytelling techniques. So, you know, humans can grasp it with everything else that's going on in our day. Right. That it's not any more complicated than that, no matter how large the problem is or how small it is.
Great response. Sushi, on behalf of myself and all of our listeners, I just want to say thank you so much for the thought that you put into preparing for today's interview and really helping us demystify the art of being a rock star problem solving. Thank you.
I'm very happy to be of help here. It was such a pleasure.
Thank you so much. Though solving complex problems can sometimes take multiple weeks and scores of people analyzing the issues, it's reassuring to know that nearly every problem faced in business is solvable if looked at in the correct manner. Ajay reminds us to be sure that we're asking the right questions. He says that one way to improve this quality is to be curious. Inquire about why things are the way they are, or as Ajay says, why is. He also discussed buy-in and why it's crucial to not only present solutions, but ensure that the stakeholders are ready to embrace them. Tsuchi also focused on gaining a better understanding of the true problem. To do that, differentiate between the causes and symptoms, structure the problem into components, and gather the facts to understand the influencing factors. Let's close with advice shared by both Ajay and Tsuchi, which is to make the solutions actionable. Ensure the stakeholders buy in by being transparent and credible. Present with them, truly listening to their thoughts and concerns. On behalf of our amazing sponsor, Presentium, and executive producer, Rajat Mishra, thank you for listening to this episode of Think Deeply, Speak Simply. I'm your host, Jay Rook, and if you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to the podcast, and we'd love it if you would rate and review the show. Until next time, think deeply and speak simply.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Think Deeply, Speak Simply. To learn more about the art and science of communicating ideas, visit our Thought Leadership Library at presentium.com.